All right, Kyle, I would really like to hear what you have found out about the word soundwriting more as compositionists mean it. Is anyone else in our field using the term?
Well, really, what we've already heard here is the only time we've found people actually saying this is soundwriting using that word. You know, it's you in the classroom, it's Will around 2008, and then there's the Kairos piece from Stanley Harrison. Besides that, though, as we know, a lot of people have, in rhetoric and composition, been talking and writing about sound in our field a lot lately.
Yeah, there's people talking about music, about Foley arts, and voice, and acoustics, and resonance, and tons of other things.
Yeah.
Let's hear about all of them!
Okay, well, hold on. Here's the thing. I'm trying to think of our audience here for this book, and I think that the people we're trying to make this book for are especially people who want to teach with sound in the classroom. And I don't just mean teach about sound or like listen to music and then analyze it and write essays about it. I mean people who want their students to open up an audio editor and play around with the actual sound files itself. Isn't that who we're working towards here?
Yeah. So these are students who are making sound and maybe curating sound. They're certainly building and writing with sound, not just about sound.
Yeah, so I think that actually can give us a little bit of a focus for this upcoming lit review section. We can say that if someone is giving us advice about how voice and music inspire written language, then maybe we can just push that aside in an honoring way and say, hey, we love that work and you've done a great job, but that's not what we want to share with you right now. And actually, I think a really good model for what we're including in this section and what we're not is the fall 2016 issue of Kairos. It's issue 21.1, where three of the four lead articles have to do with sound in some way, but only one embodies the kinds of things that we're covering here in this section.
I know where you're going with this. You want to talk about Tanya K. Rodriguez's piece that she co-wrote with nine students, Navigating the Soundscape, Composing with Audio.
Absolutely, I do.
Great choice. It's a rich, multi-layered web text that features student audio productions, detailed pedagogies, and a ton of citations. For teachers who are new to sound writing, it's a fantastic place to start. It even goes into depth about how student compositions can thoughtfully use music, silence, sound effects, sound interaction, and voice.
Yes, that's the kind of work that we'll discuss in this lit review, articles that are all about how to teach students to manipulate sound itself. And we can actually contrast that to two other articles in that same issue of Kairos.
They're both great, of course.
For sure, but they're not about students making sounds. Janine Butler's Where Access Meets Multimodality, The Case of ASL Music Videos, is also fundamentally interested in pedagogy, just like Rodriguez's piece with her students. But in Butler's article, students are primarily viewing and creating videos. So, of course, video also includes sound, and her students are instructed to create a brief, accessible video. But teaching students to manipulate sound doesn't feel like one of her core concerns to me, even though issues of sound and deafness are at the heart of her article. Does that distinction make sense to you?
Yeah, that article is super cool. It's about sound and pedagogy, but it's just not about sound writing pedagogy.
Exactly. So similarly, Crystal Van Coten's Singer-Writer, A Choric Exploration of Sound and Writing, again, it's in the same issue, it's also powerful and moving, perhaps especially to people like me who sing in choirs.
Me too.
Yes, but as much as Van Coten's piece is about understanding another angle of how sound works on our bodies, it's not about teaching. So we won't go into detail about it here or other pieces like it. And we could go on forever about other awesome pieces like that. I mean, just look at the groundbreaking work in two special issues on sound that change the way people in rhetoric and composition talk about sound, but again, which don't talk about pedagogy at all. I'm thinking of the 1999 special issue of Enculturation that Thomas Rickert edited. It's called Writing, Music, Culture. And there's also that 2013 special issue of Harlot that John Stone and Steph Sarasso edited on sonic rhetorics. We still love that work, even if it's not our focus here.
And to add one more wrinkle, there's a lot of work on sound and even teaching with sound that isn't coming from our disciplinary world of rhet comp. That work matters a lot. It's amazing. But we're staying focused in our own world here, at least for now. Hopefully future projects will more systematically make connections.
Absolutely. A good example of how rhet comp work on sound overlaps with other related disciplines can be found at Sounding Out. It's a site that describes itself as a weekly online publication, a networked academic archive, and a dynamic group platform bringing together sound studies scholars. I mean, if you just search their site for pedagogy, you'll find all kinds of pieces that I think we should all read, including some rhet compy type stuff. There's a 2012 article from Gentry Sayers called Audio Culture Studies, Scaffolding a Sequence of Assignments. His students do a ton of recording the sounds around them and even build up to an audio portfolio. So yes, read the stuff on Sounding Out. Sometimes it's more related to our world, sometimes it's not. But honestly, we're not going to go too far down that rabbit hole of sonic pedagogies from communication, from media studies, from other areas of English studies.
Okay, so we've got Burdett and Harrison using the term sound writing, and we've got enculturation and Harlot special issues, but that is not nearly everyone working on sound and writing, right?
Of course not. Some articles are in print-only sources, but because our field has so many cool digital spaces for publication, like this one, there are some online places where we can actually hear teachers and sometimes even student voices doing sound writing a little bit. Again, even though they're not using that word sound writing.
That's cool. So let's list the most important stuff.
Cool. So another special issue, right? People always talk about the 2006 Computers and Composition special issue, which actually has a print edition and an online edition. And the print edition does talk about teaching some. There are people like Bump Halbreder, who's talking about the audio aspects of video projects. And there are people like Jody Shipka in the same issue talking about students who made audio projects. She did give them a broad do something multimodally kind of assignment, but some of them are doing stuff with sound. But then if you look at the online edition of that 06 special issue, there are some people there who are talking about sound writing, and we can actually hear some of their reflections, hear some of their work.
I think that's so important when we're trying to learn about sound, to be able to hear examples of it.
I know. There's something exciting about it, too. I'm not just imagining, what do you sound like?
Okay. Halbreder and Shipka. Excellent. What else you got?
Okay. So in the Computers and Composition Online special issue, we've got Kevin Brooks and four others who have a piece called What's Going On? Listening to Music, Composing Videos. And they include a whole lot of student examples there. It's kind of a bummer that the downloads don't work anymore, but I'm sure the recordings of the student work exist somewhere. In that same issue, Michelle Comstock and Mary E. Hawks have a piece called Voice in the Cultural Soundscape, Sonic Literacy and Composition Studies. And they include, again, plenty of student examples. Like, here's an example from Michelle's student, Miku Rager.
How much accent is too heavy of an accent? How much accent am I allowed to have?
I think it is so brave when people interrogate their own accents. It's really revealing. What else is in that issue?
Well, besides just student examples, it's also a nice place to feel a little bit closer to the actual author of the piece. For example, in that same issue, Stephen D. Krause has a piece called Broadcast Composition, Using Audio Files and Podcasts in an Online Writing Course. He introduces teaching with voice with his own voice.
The next section is sort of a how to, in general, record audio files and also how I did it for this particular class.
Well, those are all awesome and important, but what about more recent stuff?
Well, in 2011, there's another special issue. It's in Currents in Electronic Literacy. It's actually the issue that Will Burdett mentioned a long time ago that came out of UT's DWRL. That's the Digital Writing and Research Lab. It's a really rich issue on writing with sound, with 14 pieces that cover remix, video game music, captioning, autoethnography, and metal. But three of its pieces really say a lot to the teacher of sound writing. So, of course, those are the ones that we want to highlight here. So, for example, Crystal Van Coten had a piece called A New Composition, A 21st Century Pedagogy and the Rhetoric of Music. And in that composition, she had a video that really heavily features her student, Caitlin Patterson.
I wanted the music to be as like transitions too. So each section of each song is kind of like a paragraph or an idea in a traditional piece or a traditional written piece.
Wow, that is really smart. I am not sure I imagined it would be possible to use sound writing to get students thinking about arrangement. That's a little like my idea for developing an audible punctuation system.
Cool. I want to hear more about that sometime. in that same issue, there's also an article by Mark Blauhara and Kevin Putman. And in this case, Blauhara was the professor and Kevin Putman was the student. And together they made a hip hop track about the student Kevin dealing with his OCD.
When I think back to my 10th year when my OCD began, trying on my socks, my left and right was for my just right plan. Unbeknownst to me, my life was overcome with symmetry, checking and rechecking and that re-responsibility.
I love this. I keep trying to get my own students to wrap their essays, and so far nobody wants to try it.
Well, in that same issue, we also can hear Lydia French and Emily Bloom talk to each other, or interviewing each other, and sharing some of their students' work, again, in a piece that's called Aurality, From Plato to Podcasting and Back Again.
I think this was a bit much for me to ask them. I've looked at some other assignments, and mine was very long. It was 10-minute oral composition.
Those pieces from Currents remind me of Mo Folk's web text on audio essays in Computers and Composition Online.
Yeah, in an article called Making Waves, Voiceless Audio Essays and the Visual Rhetoric of Aural Rhetoric, Folk highlights two very different audio essays made by his students, pausing between clips of them to offer his own audible commentary.
The next student example is an example of what I would call the voiceless student essay. The student audio example contains many, many voices, 12 presidents just to name a few, but it does not have a trace of the student's actual physical voice, though I argue it maintains the other hallmarks of writing voice I just mentioned.
I know as I assign audio essays in the future, I'll think more about how I'm approaching the topic of voice because of Folk's article.
I know we had that early piece that uses the word sound writing, but there has been more stuff about teaching with audio in Kairos even before the 2016 issue we were talking about a minute ago.
Yeah, for sure. In 2012, do you remember Jennifer Bowie had two companion pieces about podcasting in the classroom? They're definitely sound writing pieces in exactly the way we're talking about. And like we've been saying, it's actually cool that we get to hear Jennifer making podcasts about podcasts.
Welcome to Rhetorical Roots and Media Future, how podcasting fits into the computers and writing classroom. Episode 1, Overview and Definitions. Podcasting in a writing class? Considering the possibilities. Episode 1, Introduction and Background.
Let's make sure to talk about Cindy Self's 2009 piece too, Kyle. Everybody cites that one.
Right. It's a really big deal. Her College Composition Communication 3Cs article, which is essentially saying to the field, hey, people, we need to pay more attention to orality and the big picture of all that stuff here in composition studies. In some ways that we're not talking about here, but also it does have a teaching focus.
But that's a printed piece, so there's no audio that's integral to it. She's linking out to these four examples?
Yeah, she actually says, here is where you can go onto my personal Ohio State server and listen to these examples of sound writing, of students making pieces. The link doesn't actually work anymore, as often happens here. When I emailed her and asked her, she said that anyone who wants to hear these can email her, and she does have the link to the pieces still on her Google Drive.
Good, so everybody email Cindy.
Oh, and the other cool thing about that piece is she has a lot of notes directing readers to other websites and a lot of course sites where we can see what other people have been doing in the classroom. And, you know, that's part of what we found since we've started this project. We start saying, hey, are you guys doing stuff with sound out there? And all these people are saying, well yeah, we're trying and trying. We're just not getting a lot of support. So, again, that's part of the context here. We're trying to point people to that piece and to other pieces so they can see what other people are doing.
There are a bunch more articles that talk about sound writing without including sound as part of the publication, though, printed or alphabetic stuff. Like Mary E. Hawks and Michelle Comstock, they have a 2017 article, Composing for Sound, Sonic Rhetoric as Resistance, that walks readers through a four-part assignment sequence focusing on resonance and listening. Their students do a lot of recording and editing, but often with the result that they're trained to listen in new ways, bracketing their analytic responses to sound in favor of the different ways sounds make their bodies resonate. It's not a web text, like you don't actually hear the students' work, but it still says a lot about what we can do with sound writing in the classroom.
Yeah, of course. And you remember Steph Sarasso and her 2014 award-winning college English piece. So she's talking about multimodal listening and this idea of feeling sound in your body. And even though it's a traditional printed piece, she ends in that traditional way that our field so often does, with some suggestions about how to attend to these issues in the classroom. And some of those suggestions of hers actually involve students making sounds together.
Jonathan Alexander had something in 2015 about Glenn Gould, right?
Yeah, Glenn Gould, that guy who hummed when he was playing Bach in his recordings. Right. Well, there's a whole documentary about Glenn Gould that I haven't seen that I really want to see.
I guess I should actually hum Bach there, shouldn't I?
No, it's totally fine. Don't worry. The cool thing about Gould as a character is that he was someone who really paid a lot of attention to recording. And not just recording, but he was controversial because he would splice his tapes together. He would try to make the perfect recording from his different takes. And some people didn't like the idea of that being, I don't know, kind of fake.
Sure, I guess that, you know, that's not an authentic performance.
Yeah, but it was him the whole time, so it was authentically edited together.
Mm.
I don't know. But like Sarasso, Alexander, remember, who's writing about Glenn Gould, he ends his piece with specifics about how we can encourage students to think of the same sort of things that are inspired by Gould, kind of the way that Sarasso's article is inspired by Evelyn Glennie.
Computers and Composition has been putting out a good number of articles about sound writing.
Yeah, the year after Alexander's piece, Jean Bassett has a piece too, where she essentially tells her readers how her students responded to sound writing assignments. She had her students listen to gay liberation radio shows and had them make audio collages.
This is The Gay Life, KSAN's public affairs show for gentlemen who prefer gentlemen, for women who prefer women, and for people who prefer people. You don't have to be gay to listen. Good morning.
And then Bassett's article, even though it's a print article in a print journal, it does give a lot of respect and a lot of voice to her students. She quotes extensively from them saying things like, this is what I did and what I went through, and this is how I grew as I was making this assignment.
With these three articles, we get a pretty interesting representation of the types of sound that people are writing with. We have environmental sound. We have musical sound. And then we also have an archival sound.
This is The Gay Life, KSAN's public affairs show for gentlemen who prefer gentlemen.
Absolutely. It's reminding us of all the genres that are available to teachers when they do bring sound writing into the classroom.
So maybe people would think that sound writing is the simple reading of words, but these examples are showing us that it can involve quite a number of inspirational sound sources.
Yeah, I think that's even been a theme in some recent work. I mean, Sarasso's piece even reminds us that we can go beyond discursive stuff. We can go beyond the simple text and discourse when we're making sonic texts.
I argue that alongside and in addition to semiotic approaches to multimodality, it is necessary to address the affective, embodied, lived experience of multimodality in more explicit ways.
And then Katie Fargo Ahern, in a different Computers and Composition piece, also reminds us that when we're using sound, we don't have to just rely on words.
What I found myself questioning was not how to introduce audio essays or voiceover, but how to introduce students to uses of sound that do not necessarily draw on the spoken word, voice, or discourse.
By the way, let me mention that those recordings you just heard of Sarasso and Ahern are the authors' voices reading their print work for this project, just so you're not confused or you try to look for the digital version online or something.
Got it.
Here's one more recent piece that I think makes a similar point. Aaron Anderson's 2014 piece in Enculturation even specifically critiques assignments that, and here's a quote from her, that restrict voices' material potential to the direct representation of intentional speech. So she's reminding us that we can do so much more than record just intentional speech.
Yeah, sound is effective, embodied. It's not just reading or speaking.
Sound is so much bigger.